In unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning.
Right.
So, welcome. And if I say something that is too obscure, or maybe I use a, you know, Zen term or something, anyway, please feel free to ask. So we're still on the marrow of Zen. Maybe we're always on the marrow of Zen. Maybe you should just shut the door. Because it's also, for me, it's kind of distracting because I'm looking right at her. So the fascicle, turns out what a fascicle means is like a part of the whole, like one bundle out of many bundles. So because these are, what we're usually talking about is a collection of essays or edited lectures or so on. One of them is called a fascicle. I looked it up. somebody asked what it meant the other day, and I realized I didn't know. We just call them fascicles. Okay, so this one, The Marrow of Zen, starts out by describing the four kinds of horses, and the best kind, the excellent ones, run left, right, whatever, just from a touch of the reins, say, at the will of the rider, without anything more. And a good one runs at the sight of the whip, but the whip doesn't need to touch him. What's the word he used? The third one, I guess, is a poor one. And that one doesn't run until the whip hits it, until it feels the sting of the whip. And a bad one apparently has to get beaten. Bloody, maybe. He says, fourth will run after the pain penetrates to the marrow of its bones. Oh my God. Okay. But when he discusses it, he talks about how we all think, oh, I want to be the excellent one, and that the excellent one is the best one, the one that hardly needs the slightest suggestion of which way to go and how to go. And you might think that when you sit, you'll find out what kind of horse you are, and maybe it's easy for you. Maybe you can just sit full lotus right off the bat. And maybe you'll find out you're not so hot. Maybe you're a bad one. But this is a misunderstanding. He says, if you think the aim of Zen practice is to train you to become one of the best horses, you will have a big problem. This is not the right understanding. If you practice Zen in the right way, it doesn't matter whether you are the best horse or the worst one. Because what's the point? What is the point? That's Kate and I are going to do this together, actually. We're going to take turns. We're running a relay race here. can you turn the clock a little bit so I, because I can't see it. There you go. Thanks. Does that work? Mm-hmm. So what's the point? And the point is not to be an excellent horse. The point is not to be able to do it
right away.
I kept thinking as Kate and I talked about this, about how, you know, that if you're not challenged, how much do you really learn? Do you go deep if you're not challenged? Probably not. Probably not. I had to work really hard to learn to be a Kokyo, the person who leads the chanting. Because I was raised being told that I could not carry a tune. So to be willing to lead the chanting, to be this sing, to, you know, there's a clunk on the big bell, and then the Kokyo jumps off a cliff. All alone, just that person's voice. And it was very difficult for me. And I feel like I learned a lot. And I worked with the head of the meditation hall at Tassajara. I was a doan, and she was our boss. But, and she had a really good voice, and she actually was musically trained. I mean, sometimes she'd tell me that I was like a third off. She means absolutely nothing to me. And then she would show me, or she would tell me that it didn't really matter. So I don't know. But she was very, and she was very patient, and we worked together during work period a lot. And she listened to me, and she didn't make fun of me, and she made a tape for me for the really complicated part of the, for the Kokyo, for what's called the full moon ceremony or the renewal of intention ceremony, of the long singing part. She made me a tape so I could go listen to it as much as I wanted, all by myself. And I feel like I really know what it means to be a Kokyo. And I know the fear of starting out, because some people don't feel that. Some people have good voices and have always been told they had good voices, and they're anxious to be Kokyo. Amazing. But I feel like one of the ways that I can be useful is that I know how hard it can be. I know how scary it can be. I feel it right. I know that because I've experienced it. I've been there and I've struggled with it. And I'm a good Kokyo. I'm number two, I guess. Good Kokyo. I'm not a great Kokyo. But that, I think that challenge goes with the territory. But what it reminded me of, though, that thing about, you know, it's not about being the best or the worst or whatever. One thing is, it's not a competition, you Americans. We Americans. I'll leave myself out. Okay. But there's a fascicle that we often read during longer sittings, and it's called the Fukan Zazengi, and it's our Japanese founder Dogen's, basically his meditation instruction. And if you have meditation instruction here, Steve will probably, it may not be obvious, but he may well quote it. But Dogen is talking about finding awakening. It can't be understood by our brains. It can't be fully known any, it's beyond hearing and seeing. Okay. This being the case, intelligence or lack of it does not matter. Between the dull and the sharp-witted, there is no distinction. If you concentrate your efforts single-mindedly, that in itself is negotiating the way. Between the dull and the sharp-witted, there's no distinction. Well, I think it's, we're going to keep talking about the point, but the one of the ways of understanding it is that it, the point is wholehearted effort, devotion to practice, heart. I've been thinking about, there's a song in the musical Damn Yankees, which most of you don't remember probably, but it's a modern version of, oh, for God's sake. That one, Faust.
Yeah.
And this guy sells his soul to the devil in order to get to play on the Yankees and be a star, of course, a slugger for the Yankees. And the team has been terrible. And they, at one point, the manager sings to them, to some of the guys. This is before the man sells his soul. And the manager sings the song, "You Gotta Have Heart. Miles and miles and miles of heart. When the odds are saying you'll never win, that's when the grin should start." And so I'll stop. But that's it. You've got to have heart to stay right here. Wholehearted effort. Okay, Kate, over to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what we kept coming back to, is wholeheartedness. And the next section talks about your imperfections. In your very imperfections, you will find the basis for your firm, way-seeking mind. And it's not that I learned to not have imperfections. It's that the way I held my imperfections became much more gentle as I sat and as I sit more. Most of my Sangha brothers and sisters that I've spoken to, it seems we all carry kind of a big stick that we hold over our heads to sort of whack us when we don't think we're doing something right, or we have pain that we're sitting with. If I was a better Zen student, I wouldn't have this experience. I wouldn't have such a busy mind after sitting for 20 years, or I wouldn't still have that nagging pain in my shoulder after three periods of sitting. And for me, that's not the case. So what that says to me now is each time I have some experience that I perceive as not being the best horse, it's an opportunity for me to awaken that compassionate heart. And to have that wholeheartedness. And you just have to sit down in order to have that experience. Because for me, I think for a long time, I thought someone could give it to me. You know, here, this is how it's done. If you do it this way, you win. you get the star or the robe or the, you know, or the rakusu, or, but it's not an accomplishment. It's these things for me have been an expression of my willingness to sit with agreeable and disagreeable experience. And it's the posture and the sitting that is where that experience happens for me. And then what I find as I walk out my door and into my daily life, it doesn't, well, most of the time it leaves me, but more often, more of it stays with me so that it's my life, not just the cushion, you know. The other part that I just wanted to call attention to, and Suzuki Roshi seems to be great about making proclamations and then saying something different later. But so whenever he says, you know, it's easier for those with difficulties in sitting to arouse the true way-seeking mind than for those who can sit easily, I don't know that for certain, because for me, it wasn't ever easy. but for some people, perhaps it is, you know. And earlier in that paragraph, he talks about the calligraphers, those who it comes too easily, have trouble later on. And I know in my own experience as an artist, it was very hard for me to learn how to draw. I know people who had great facility. I even went, when Sunny and I first moved up here, I spent a year in an atelier program where they used this very prescribed method of teaching you how to draw. And it was really hard. And by the end of it, I felt like it was too narrow. However, what it did was every day, 5 days a week, from 9 a.m. till noon, we drew from the figure, a live model. And it got easier as I did it, and I got better at it. And then you have to let go of being better at it, which is the hard part, I think. So I also like it that he says, I really worried about my posture a lot early on. And I did try all kinds of different things, you know, sitting on a bench, sitting with my legs touched. I never could do the full lotus. I can do half lotus, but I never, my legs just won't do that without a great deal of pain. So it's, that also for me was a part of my wholeheartedness. I mean, my desire to learn, I guess. So I just wanted to say for people who are just beginning to sit, it, you know, just try a bunch of different ways. It's okay. I used to, you know, when I first went to Green Gulch or Tassajara, I would see all these black robes, you know, sitting there, what appeared to me perfectly still and unmoving. And I held that as my model for a long time, you know, trying to be like that. And later when I sat longer there, I did notice people moved and shifted and that kind of thing. So, all right, Mary, back to you.
Yeah, I like that too about the, referring to people who have difficulties. And he says, even if you cannot take the right posture, when you arouse your real way-seeking mind, you can practice Zen in its true sense. And he says that sometimes you may need to sit on a chair or on a bench or lie down. Thing with lying down is you might fall asleep and then you might snore. Okay, so to continue on, he emphasizes that he talks about a student who wrote to him and said that he'd been trying to follow the mottos on a calendar that Suzuki Roshi had sent, probably San Francisco Zen Center sent. And it's only been a couple months and he's already failed. And I could imagine that when he read that, Suzuki Roshi laughed. And then he talks about a phrase, a Japanese phrase that Dogen used, Shoshaku Jushaku, which is basically translated as one continuous mistake. that's our practice, one continuous mistake. According to Dogen, he said, one continuous mistake can also be Zen. Yeah.
Could you repeat that, please?
The Japanese phrase, Shoshaku Jushaku. Shaku generally means mistake or wrong. And Shoshaku Jushaku means to succeed wrong with wrong. Translated as one continuous mistake, which is what our lives are. And every time you open your mouth and discriminate, you're making a mistake. So, oh well. And he says that it can also be Zen. I think I wouldn't say it that way. I'd say it is Zen. I mean, what are you doing but noticing your mistakes and letting them go, and noticing them and letting them go? A Zen master's life could be said to be so many years of Shoshaku Jushaku. This means so many years of one single-minded effort. One single-minded effort. And the single-minded effort is sitting up straight and noticing and letting go. And what are you noticing but mistakes? You know, so much of the time, you're noticing mistakes. And as Kate was talking about, eventually get tired of beating yourself up about it, and you just come back to your breath. You notice that you've been thinking. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to yell at yourself. You don't have to even say, oh, I should go back to my... Just, you noticed already. You don't have to do anything about it. Just return to your breath. And if you beat yourself up, notice that. And if you started to do a slump, you notice, and so then you sit up straight, and you don't have to talk to yourself about it. You don't have to beat yourself up about it. People do beat themselves up. I boast. I stopped being critical of myself for being critical of myself, and that's a major thing. But I really don't do that anymore. I still have critical of myself. But it's not like it was. So a single-minded effort, wholehearted practice. And learning how to accept Shoshaku Jushaku. And it is last section is about how we can get in our own way by being prideful. That's not exactly how he talks about it, but that you won't get at the marrow if you are prideful. If you think, I'm a really good husband, I'm a really good wife, I'm a really good parent, I'm a really good Zen teacher, then probably you're not. You know, it's the ones who think, oh, I wish I could be better at this. I wish I could be more empathetic. I wish I could learn how to be more supportive of A, B, or C. I'm not so good at this. And I want to be better at it. One who thinks he's one of the worst husbands may be a good one if he's always trying to be a good husband. If you find it impossible to sit because of some pain or physical difficulty, then you should sit anyway.
using a thick cushion or a chair. Even though you are the worst horse, you will get to the marrow of Zen. But that's not being the worst horse. I mean, it just depends on definite. But if you define worst horse as having lovely posture, beautiful, what looks like effortless and maybe effortless posture, so what? I used to call that at San Francisco Zen Center, and maybe still do, called it as if practice. That looks really great. But where's the marrow? Where's the heart? Where's the, you know, this is quite fair, but I was going to say, where's the struggle? Because I think that is, we need that struggle. We need the difficulties in order to deepen our practice. And he says, if you try to be a good husband, before I just said a single-minded effort, this time he says a single-hearted effort. Single-hearted effort. He talks about sitting with real difficulty. Like if your child is dying, for example. What do you do? You know, you can't sleep. You could go to bed, but then you just toss and turn and get up because you can't stand it. You pace. And Suzuki Roshi says the best way to relieve your mental suffering is to sit, he says, to sit zazen even in such a confused state of mind and bad posture. I really, really like that he says bad posture. In other words, just sit down and get in touch with your breath. But if you can't sit up straight, or if you're sitting there crying, it's okay. Just sit there. No other activity will appease your suffering. But in the Zazen posture, which you have acquired by long, hard practice, your mind and body have great power to accept things as they are, whether they're agreeable or disagreeable. He also says, if you have no experience of sitting in this kind of difficult situation, you are not a Zen student. Well, that's kind of glib. I mean, a lot of people, most of us have not lost a child, that is. But even losing a spouse, losing a parent, losing a sibling, it's hard enough. But people, especially in their 20s and maybe their 30s, you don't necessarily have these experiences yet. They may have been fired, which is pretty bad. I'm not talking about being laid off, but I'm really fired. I'll stop with the lists, but at any rate, I think that's a little bit. And I think in order to that those experiences do in fact deepen your practice. And finding that sitting through them deepens your practice. And it's not easy. When my parents died within a few months of each other, about a month later maybe, I did a 6-week practice period residential at Green Gulch. And every time we got up to do walking, usually it's like you sit 40 minutes and then you walk for 10 and then you sit for 40. So whenever we did the walking meditation, that's when if you need to use the bathroom, you do. And I'd get up and I just wanted out of that center. And it was all I could do not to go use the bathroom. Just to change the subject, I didn't really need to. But I did not leave the center. Maybe I did once or twice. I don't remember. But what I do remember is just staying in the Zendo and just doing the walking meditation and sitting down. And that was one of the hardest things I've ever done. And I wanted to be with this difficulty. It was emotionally painful. I was sad and I was also sometimes very angry and
I'm frightened of my own, one's own death comes up when one's parents die, especially when the second one dies. I hadn't been practicing all that long. But anyway, that I think that's the kind of thing that deepens our practice. And you don't have to look for those experiences will come to you. Hang around life for a while, and those experiences will come to you. And I once glibly said something about, well, but there were some high school students here, and I don't know how old you are. I can see that you're substantially younger than I am, but I don't know. Anyway, so there were these high school students there, and I said something glib about, well, you guys haven't had these experiences yet. Well, the young woman there had just lost her mother. Mm-hmm. I don't know, she had, you know, question and answer, she brought it up, and then I felt like a jerk. I felt so bad. But I'm really glad she brought it up. So, Kate, you want to talk about this section a little?
Sure. I've had a lot of practice sitting on the cushion with disagreeable things. And just it's pretty much the same as you're talking about. It's interesting to me to watch my own mind, how it keeps trying to scheme a way out of it, you know, whether it's getting up to use the restroom or, you know, I think I've told the story before, but one evening, Mary asked me to come open the Zendo because she was going to be somewhere, and there were just two people, and we were on either side of the wall. And over there, and I was very tired, and my back hurt really badly, and I adjusted myself, and I thought to myself, well, that person on the other side of the wall won't see me if I just lay down on these cushions here and have a nice relaxed period of zazen. And I could have done that, you know. I don't think that would have been totally horrible. I mean, Mary has always said to me, don't hurt yourself. But what's interesting to me is I knew it wasn't that bad, you know? So I thought, well, I'll sit for a while and see what happens. And so what happened is that as I kept breathing, the sensation changed. It didn't go away, but it changed, and I kept sitting, and I sat till the end of the period without the same kind of pain I began with, and with some sense of it was freeing in a way, because it helped me not be so frightened by experiences that I was having. I don't know if that makes any sense or not. And then even a few weeks ago, I was sitting here with all of you, and I was so restless. I mean, it wasn't a physical pain at all. It was just, I just did not want to sit still. I just, my whole body wanted to go. And I, again, my mind says to me, oh, well, they're all sitting. I'm on a screen. They're not going to pay any attention. I could just walk out of here and walk back when it's all over and no one would know. But I sat with it, and I feel like it helps me let go of wanting to control everything that's happening in my body or my experience. And I have found it valuable to sit with that. You know, and I wanted to say one more thing before, and I'll make it quick. It was just about the things coming easily, whether it's with sitting or with drawing or whatever. I did notice, when I was in that atelier program that, there were people who were just had great virtuosity and could, you know, make a drawing like Leonardo. And it also seemed that they were the most critical of others. And ultimately, a lot of the stuff I saw was kind of deadly boring, you know? It's sort of like, where's I see the technique, where's the heart, where's the energy in this? And I think it's fine. I could sit, you know, perfectly still and look like a good Zen student, but I think you'll know if my heart is in it or not.
You want to read that last sentence in continuous and we'll close with that?
Okay. The last
sentence.
Okay.
This effort in continuous. We don't like the first part of that
paragraph. In continuous practice, under a succession of agreeable and disagreeable situations, you will realize the marrow of Zen and acquire its true strength. Yeah.
Yep. So it's 11:24, and I'm just, are you able to stay for tea?
Yes.
Is everybody able to stay for tea? So we'll bring you guys with us, and we can talk about it over tea because it's been kind of a long time, and I hope that there's lots of conversation about this. I don't know.
Okay.
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them.